good morning to the department, the delegation from the department and the delegation from the NASFIS and anyone else. Let me first of all apologize. This is a small room. We continue to battle in Parliament with venues. Worse, there are some rooms that are being renovated. Next door, the cabinet is meeting instead of on that side. Lots of those kind of things. So we are very close to the cabinet, I must say. Is that this? Yes.
What are the
honourable member. It is a very violent suggestion that you are for. We're trying to make sure that no one stands in this meeting, that at least there is sufficient chairs. May I find out what's happening to the water today? Because very soon we're going to, there we go, there's some trolley coming in, saving us from the problem in the Western Cape, who's now digging up water underneath the bed of a dam at the NPS water floor. The surface water, you go underneath, they're underneath now. The problem looking for water. Honourable members, our agenda here today, having opened and welcomed all of you, the apologies that we have, none. Yes, there's supposed to have been a written apology from Honourable Mavunda. He sent me something. He's got a bereavement. Mavunda's got a bereavement. The remainder of the agenda, Honourable Members, is the briefing by the National Student Financial Aid Scheme together with the department. What I suggest we do, Honourable Members, is that we get the briefing from the department first and then follow with the briefing by NASFIS. We then discuss it together. On the agenda is supposed to be the minutes also. Where is it? Oh, there it is, on the other side of the paper. The minutes is also there. That's our agenda, Honourable Members. I trust we are happy with the agenda. Thank you, Honourable Killian. Welcome, Deputy Minister. Is there any possibility that you can give us an update on GUT? Can we then amend Honourable Members to get a briefing on progress made at the impasse at GUT? And if you have anything on Forte, that will also assist us. So, all right, so we add that to the agenda. Of the methods and may I ask the department to introduce their delegation? And DDG, are you going to leave? Over to you, DDG Parker.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. The delegation from the Department of Higher Education and Training includes our CFO, myself, and the members from the University Education Branch and the TVET Branch. And Deputy Minister is here to introduce us. I suppose he is really the leader of the delegation. I'm here on behalf of DG to do the presentations and so on. Honourable Chair, would you like us to each introduce ourselves, or is that a sufficient enough? Thank you very much. I think then if DM, would you want want DM to make a few comments and perhaps
not?
Not. Okay. We should just go directly into the presentation. We're just needing to put it into the onto the computer. But perhaps just to start off, I'm going to look at firstly an overview of what the budget has been provided and what it's been provided for. And then following that, look specifically at the division of that budget in terms of the university education processes and the various processes in relation to university, followed by the processes in relation to the TVET colleges. And then what we'll do following that is look specifically at the issues that have been highlighted, the need for upfront payments, how we've handled that, and LISAC will give more information on that later. Issues around the bursary administration risks and how we are handling those, and the various intervention measures that we've been putting in place in order to manage the processes as we go into the 2018 academic year. And then perhaps also to highlight at the end some of the processes that we will be putting in place going forward to ensure effective administration of the new scheme into the future. So that'll be how we do it. Have you got it?
No.
Is it not coming up then?
Yeah.
Is that the one that's left? So perhaps just as an overview of the funding in terms of the MTEF and the estimates, National Treasury has submitted the revised MTEF allocation letters, which show the additional funds in terms of subsidies and in terms of what is coming to NSFAC, the total amounting to 57 billion over the MTEF. And in terms of this, there are different line items that have been identified. And perhaps what I'd want to do is just speak to each of those line items. The first line item is for universities, which deals with the increase in subsidy funding, and an amount to cover the 8% increase for students in the system. Now, that amount, if you look at the line item, is 11.3 billion over the MTEF. And what that is working towards 1% of GDP from 6.8% of GDP in 2017. So by the fifth year, we should be at the additional amount leading to 1% of GDP in the baseline subsidy. Now, the reason for that and the importance of that. The first slide. There's one that says Department of Higher Education and Training, briefing on the allocation of funds to universities and TVET colleges, 2018. I should be copying. James, are there copies? Have you got it? Are you going to go to later? If you look at that first amount on that the third slide of that particular presentation, it talks to the universities. It says 0% increase, but it's actually 8% increase for 2018 and subsidy funding. And that really is about the amount of money that's been made available in the baseline to take the university subsidy up to 1% of GDP over a 5-year period. So this is the first 3 years that are shown specifically in terms of the MTEC. The 8% will cover the gap grant funding for the 2018 students, but then we don't expect a carry through on that going into 2019, 20, etc., because one of the big issues is about how do we deal with regulating fees across the university education system. And that will be a major project that we are undertaking together with University of South Africa this year, so that we could, can put in place a process for ensuring that we have rational increases linked to inflation going forward, and we don't get into the same problems as we had before. And having the additional funding in the baseline will enable us to implement such a policy. So it's a really important aspect of creating sustainability in the system. The second line talks specifically to the student funding for NSFAS, and this is the extra amount for the universities to support the first-time entry into the system at full cost of study. This is the new bursary scheme for poor and working class students. So we talk loosely about having introduced free higher education and training for poor and working class students, but the way we have introduced it is to develop a new bursary scheme with conditions attached that will be put into place from this year with the first time entries, and then going forward every year for first time entries until within 5 years we will have all our students covered by the new bursary scheme that are within that particular group. And you'll see there that the increase is quite substantial each year, because each year we're adding a new group of first-time entries into the system. We've calculated this on some assumptions. The key assumption was that we would, if we take the groups of students up to 350,000, cover 40% of the university first-time entrance. That is a key assumption. That still has to be tested. We are well aware of that. But it's based on the best data that we had at that particular time. The funds that would be covered for that are the actual cost of study for the course that a particular student would be doing. So it will eliminate the prior problem we had of students perhaps being in a course that was more expensive than the funding that was available. And that led to all the historic debt that we've had in the system over time. So this will cover the actual cost of study. It will cover an allowance for learning material, support materials that has been defined by NSFAS in agreement across the system, an amount for housing if a student is eligible for housing. The housing policy will be implemented at institutional level in terms of where students live and the conditions they live in, etc., to determine whether they have access to student housing. And that amount will also be capped at an institutional level so that we can try to manage the escalation of costs. There will be a process towards developing a student housing funding policy. This is the subsidized part of the announcement of fully subsidized free higher education and training, because housing obviously could be at all sorts of different costs depending on what housing one's talking about, and there will have to be a cap in terms of how much is made available. But it will be, it has been identified as an amount that covers the university costs at institutional level. The next row talks to the TVET college subsidy funding. Now, this specifically is the funding that goes to the TVET colleges to cover the 80% subsidy, and what we are doing is we're introducing that. Currently, you will know that TVET enrollments are underfunded. I think they were currently set at about 50, 54%, where they should have been 80%. And what we've calculated in terms of the funding that will be made available is that over the five-year period, that will increase to cover the full 80% of all TVET enrollment. So that means that in terms of the planned enrollment, all TVET students will be fully subsidized in terms of the 80%. Then the next amount is the amount for the funding of students, and that covers both the 20% tuition fee and the part that will be available for accommodation and transport, and we'll talk a little bit more about that later. I think very importantly, in terms of the announcement, for the very first time, we have a new amount put into the baseline for TVET colleges to deal with infrastructure. And that will be like we have in the university system, an infrastructure fund that can support the development of infrastructure in the TVET college system. This will grow over a five-year period and then become part of the baseline going forward to enable proper maintenance of college campuses and the development of infrastructure for teaching and learning and so on. So that is a really important new aspect of the budget that's been made available. And then there's also an additional amount that has been made available to NISFA for the administration. As you can imagine, this is a huge additional amount of funding that is going to have to be administered through the NISFA system, and they will require that support for administration. And then the last part of the new aspect of the budget is operationalization of new TVET colleges, examination services and pension payments at TVET. This was a gap within the TVET system. We had built some new colleges through utilizing funds made available from the NSF, but there were no operational funds to get those operational, and now that has been made available, which is also very important in terms of the development and sustainability of the system. So I think that gives you an overview of the additional amounts that have been made available and what they are for and how they've been calculated. I think importantly, what this means is that within 5 years, we will have the majority of our students, or TVET students in terms of their enrollment, covered for tuition, and they're fully funded in terms of the subsidies to the colleges. The colleges will have a TVET infrastructure program in place, and we will have, for the first time, effective funding to enable the strengthening of the college system. And what's going to be important is how that gets managed, how that gets rolled out, and how it gets monitored, which is an aspect of the system that we're going to have to build. If we go on to the next slide, what this slide shows is the university budget. Now, getting additional funding in terms of the baseline funding for subsidies obviously changes what was in our ministerial statement that was sent out to all universities at the end of last year in terms of their budget. And so we've had to re-look at this in terms of how that funding, the new funding, would be distributed across the system to deal with some of the challenges in the system. And you'll see the red writing in that particular table are all the changes from the previous ministerial statement. I think it's important to see that in terms of the block grant, there's substantial additional funding in 2018-19. It goes up by 14.6% across the board, distributed across the various aspects of the system. And you'll see there how much is going for the teaching inputs, the institutional factors, the teaching outputs, and the research outputs. So there is substantial increase in the actual block grant subsidies, which are the discretionary funds that universities have to deal with operations. This will help alleviate some of the difficulties that universities have had over the past few years as they've been challenged in terms of the fee increases. The earmark grants just indicate the various earmark grants in the system, some of which are busy phasing out, like the teaching development and research development grants. And what you'll notice here is we have allocated a substantial additional amount to the clinical training of health professionals from the subsidies that have become available. It's a major challenge that we've had in the system, and currently we are expecting in July this year a large number of Cuban-trained South African doctors coming back into the system that we're going to have to support in clinical training to become part of our health professionals in the system. And so, and so we made the decision that we needed to deal with this. We are really we were underfunded on clinical training, and it's been something that we've been making National Treasury aware of for a couple of years. And so the decision was made that some of that funding needed to go there. And then the other two areas really are the operational funds for our new universities to ensure that they are effectively funded for operations, and we don't have to take funding from the infrastructure fund to assist them to operate. And as you can imagine, the new universities will take a few years before they can move directly into the main formula for funding, and so we are having to support them separately through an earmark grant. The NSFAS amount is obviously also a huge increase. You'll see there the increase is 51.3% for NSFAS, and that includes all of these additional funds that have been made available for TVET and university students. So it's quite substantial. The next slide just describes what I've just said. So I'm not going to go through it in detail, but it just explains those in more detail in terms of what has been made available. In terms of funding to the NSFAS, if we look at slide 6, you can see there the allocation of funding. We've got the university bursary that is for the first time entry students entering into the system. That's the additional funding that's been made available. We've got the additional allocation for unfunded continuing and new students. So those were the students who were in the system last year. Some of them were able to register but weren't necessarily funded in terms of the original allocations that were made available, and we've had to ensure that they are all funded. And these students are all the students who are continuing in terms of the current threshold of 122,000. So that's seen through the pipeline. The university free higher education and training for the poor and working class is highlighted there, which gives a total for the universities which is 14.901 million in 2018-19. And then we've got the TVET college bursaries and the administration costs. So that includes both the new students and the previous students. But NSFAS will go through the details in their presentation in terms of how that's being rolled out. Then the other issue for us is the fee adjustment grant. This is being funded through some of that additional funding that has been brought into the baseline. There's been an agreement that we will continue, as we did in 2017, in 2018, to pay a fee increase capped at 8% for all qualifying university students with a gross combined family income of up to $600,000 per annum in 2018. And this is specifically for university students this year. TVET students are not included in this because they have got the 20% of their funding is fully covered. And that includes whatever the increase was. So they don't need to have that put in place. So we do still have, in terms of the amount that was made available from the NSF in last year, we still have an amount of $1.5 billion left. And then we've got the allocation for the carry-through of that, which provides a total number of funds of $4.17 billion to cover the 8% fee adjustment and to put into the line. So I think that takes us to the end of that. I'm not sure if the new has the new TV presentation being handed out there. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It says TV's upfront payments and implementation of the student centered model. So what this does is it talks to the PVET subsidy, additional baseline application, from upfront payments and bursary administration risks and intervention medical, it actually covers both universities and PVET, this presentation, because they're the same challenges, there's very little difference. So if we look at the first slide, slide number three, what that shows is the DHET subsidy allocation for TVET. In terms of the 2018-19 financial year. And you will see there the increases in the baseline, the increase to subsidies, the increase to the 80%, which is the amount that's going towards increasing for full cost subsidies, and then a TVET infrastructure grant, which is the additional amount. So we've already seen this in the first slide. If we look at the additional allocations and a breakdown of the additional allocations, which are shown on slide four, in the first one, we've got the TVET subsidy and tuition funding. So here, this combines what has been put into place to cover the 20% and move towards the 80% over the MTEC. And by the, as I said, the fifth year, we will be fully funding all enrollments in the TVET college system in terms of the current enrollment plan. I think it's important to stress the issue of the enrollment plan, that all of this funding is based on the agreed upon enrollment plans. And one of the things we've said to all institutions is, you have to stick to those numbers. If we don't stick to those numbers, we are going to end up in a situation where things can get out of control. So tight management of enrollment plans is essential, but we know there's also the risk associated with the expectations of young people out there that they should all get into a space. If everybody can be funded, but we have to stick to enrollment figures. And I think at the moment that is being managed quite closely across the system. In terms of the, you'll notice there the TVET student accommodation inclusive of meals and travel has gone up substantially. Previously there was very little funding for TVET students for accommodation and meals. There is a policy that's in place. And in terms of the data, the best data that we have in the system, this will cover 11% of the students in the TVET college system for accommodation and meals, and 18% of the students in the system for transport. The majority of the students are living close enough to the actual college campuses to not qualify for those allowances. So when we talk about the TVET scheme, everybody is covered for their tuition and learning material, so that's full coverage for all students, but for accommodation and transport, it's limited to the 11% for accommodation and 18% for transport. Now, that too is something that will be tested, because that was based on the best data that we had available when we were doing the calculation. But it will be tested this year. Between ourselves and National Treasury, we're well aware of these risks, and we understand that, you know, as we deal with this and we implement this fully, we'll have to consider what it means if the data is, if these data assumptions are incorrect. And then again, the TVET infrastructure, which, as I've indicated, is really important for developing the quality of the TVET system. In terms of the NSFAC allocations to TVET colleges specifically, this slide, slide 5, just shows the way in which the increase has happened across the system. And again, I'm hoping you've got this correct one. Slide 5, yeah. But you're looking at it there. Okay. You'll see here that the total, the original allocation was $2.579 billion. With a new increase, we've got an additional $2.585 billion, and that is divided between the tuition portion, which is $509 million, and the accommodation and travel allowances, which is $2.76 billion. So you can see the huge cost is really in travel and accommodation. It says millions at the top. It is billions. I was reading it as billions.
No, that's right.
Oh, they are not. Millions. It's 2.759 million, which is the same as 2.57 billion is the same as 2,579 million. Yes. But putting the point in there. Anyhow, the upfront payments, now these slides actually reflect both university and TVET colleges, not just the university system, TVET college system. But the upfront payments were calculated at 15% of the preliminary 2018 allocation of each college and university. So there was an understanding of what was expected in the preliminary, and 15% of that was calculated, and every college and every university, all institutions, received that by the end of January 2018. That upfront payment was meant to enable them to cover NSFAC qualifying students in terms of tuition and in terms of funding for allowances. And 40%, all institutions were informed that 40% would be for the tuition fee, and 60% of that would be for the allowances to students. So the money has been transferred to universities, but there have been some challenges, specifically around students who haven't been registered yet or had an issue on it. Okay. So we're moving to the bursary administration risks. There are challenges. I don't think any of us between ourselves and this class are unaware of the challenges. But what we are doing is we're managing these on a day-to-day basis. And just now I'll talk a little bit about the task teams that have been put in place between ourselves, NSFAC, and the system. We've got two task teams. One that involves University of South Africa, DHET and NSFAC, and another one that involves the TVET, DHET, NSFAC, and SACPA. And we're trying to deal with challenges on a continuous basis. Those teams are meeting regularly and have actually been meeting regularly since July last year. But one of the big challenges has been around data integration, and that's specifically the integration of data from the institutional site and NSFAC, and being able to get that sorted out so that we're able to effectively fund individual students. I think NSFAC will speak about that in more detail. At the colleges specifically, there are network and internet connectivity challenges. particularly when they're high volume. And we have had some problems, particularly with students trying to log in to sign their forms. With the TVET colleges, the high volume of walk-in applications at the start of the academic year have made it hard, because that is having to be managed on a basis, an ad hoc basis in some way. So that was a big risk for the system. Then the issue of the inadequate capacity at the college level and at NISPA and in the department to really manage this huge, significant amount of funds. And we having to do it through a I don't want to call it the wrong thing, but it's like a hand-holding process. We have to work together as partners in this, between the department, NISPA, and the institution. And in fact, while there have been challenges, we've had a relatively quiet registration period, and we have been managing on a case-by-case basis the various issues that have come up. Another challenge that we've had, and this is across the entire system, are delayed and inconsistent messages, particularly to colleges and students. And this has to do with the communication system, which really do have to be strengthened. We know communication is an absolutely critical part of ensuring that the system works properly. And it's not something we have been unaware of over the past while, and we have been working on it, but we still have challenges around communication. And the trouble is that young people particularly get very anxious when they don't know what's happening, and then that causes all kinds of things to follow. The other challenge is around students having to sign loan agreements and schedules of particulars. And because the message, and this is about managing expectations as well, what has to be understood is that even if you're receiving a bursary, there are still conditions attached. And you have to sign these things in order to receive the bursary. It's not just that you rock up and then you will be covered by free higher education and just get the funds. So there are conditions, and they have to sign them, and that's part of the challenge that we have in the system as well. We still have left over from last year students who ought to have been funded who haven't yet signed their agreement forms, and because they haven't signed their agreement forms, they are in debt to universities because NSFAS can't pay the universities those fees. So these are some of the challenges that we're trying to deal with in terms of the problem. And sometimes when students are complaining it's about not being funded, it has to do with some of these kinds of issues which are real challenges in the system. So how we try to manage processes and the intervention measures. So we have set up these two task teams, the one with NIPSAC, DHET and USAC. And we have not been meeting weekly actually, we've been meeting every 2 weeks in that task team. And then there's the NISFAS, DHET and SACPO task team, which has been meeting every week to try to deal with the challenges going forward. And the whole point of this was, we started this process in about July last year to deal with all the challenges that we were experiencing in terms of the rollout of the NISFAS central system. And to try to identify what the key risks and challenges were, to deal with those, and to put in place systematic processes to enable us to manage the 2018 more effectively. So there were two parts. The one was to sort out what we're doing with the 2017 funded and unfunded students, make sure that they were dealt with, and then the second part, going into 2018 to manage that process. We've been having a lot of processes in terms of dealing with correspondence in the university system. From the task team, we make decisions, and then that gets communicated out to the system via the registrar. And similar processes happening within the TVET colleges, where the TVET branch is communicating the decisions that are made to the college. As we indicated, communication is always very difficult because we're trying to do this to ensure that the right people know what systems are in place and how we can manage it. Another issue is about strengthening the capacity of the institutions to administer and help administer bursaries together with NSFAS. NSFAS can talk about that more, but I do know that NSFAS have employed about 91 personnel specifically at the TVET colleges to assist with processes around ensuring that funded students are funded. There have been a number of capacity building workshops with the financial aid officers and practitioners that have happened across the system in terms of regions with both universities and colleges to assist with ensuring that everybody knows how the administration system works. We know there are still challenges because of the data integration aspect, but at least there is this continual working now and a relationship being developed between NSFAS and the people on the ground at the colleges to help manage the process. And then NSFAS has also been having quarterly engagements with the regional officials to support institutions and particularly the colleges. So what's happening in terms of going forward in terms of 2018, the collaboration with NSFAS, as I've indicated, as part of the process, to ensure that we reduced walk-ins, we had timely submission of applications and so on, and that's going to be a focus so that in 2019, we get out to all young people that they need to apply in time. And particularly in the college sector, that's going to be a big issue because colleges have been used to walking in. Across the university system, in general, most of the walk-ins have been, you know, it happens occasionally, but it really was stopped after the 2012 tragedy that happened at UJ. There will be a development of a manual on the implementation of the student-centered system for NSFAS that will assist in terms of the universities, institutions, knowing what it is and how things are implemented, and then those standard operating procedures being put into place and being utilized. The development of frequently asked questions for students. There's been a very comprehensive document that has already been developed for universities that was sent out to all the university students and to all the university management. And I'm not sure if the portfolio committee has had access to that document, but if not, we will make sure you get copies of it. Because what that does is it goes through every single aspect of the rollout of the system, what are the conditions that we are looking at putting into place for receiving bursaries and so on. There was a communique that also went out from TVET colleges to help assist with the development of the system, and a frequently asked questions will be developed for the TVET students as well. In terms of the processes that we've undergone since the 16th of November to ensure that we try to manage what is happening in terms of the rollout, you'll remember the announcement was made on the 16th of December, and it was, while we knew what was the content of the discussions in terms of the thinking behind what might unroll, it was a surprise to have it come on the 16th in that way. And so we had to work very quickly to try and see how we could put processes in place. We met on the 18th of December, we all just stopped our holiday, and we met with NSFAS and USAF and SACCO. We had long discussions about exactly what it meant, what we understood would be in the baseline, and how it might unfold. Following that meeting, we developed a communique that had to go out to all the management of the universities and the TVET colleges. That communique went out on the 21st of December, just before everybody went off on their Christmas. So we that is also quite a comprehensive document, and we can provide the portfolio committee with a copy of that communique, so you can see exactly what was being put in place at that time with our universities and with our colleges. When we came back in January, we had a series of meetings, both on the university side with ourselves, our minister, deputy minister, and USAF. There were meetings with students, and there were meetings on with the TVET colleges, with SACPO and their stakeholders as well, just to get these ideas out to ensure that people all understood what had been decided and how we were going to. That doesn't mean that everybody did fully understand, because there was so much noise in the papers and in the media that were making up interpretations of things, which made it quite difficult. But that's why we developed the frequently asked questions, which then went out to everyone. And as we deal with complaints, as we deal with students on a daily basis, we refer them to those frequently asked questions. We answer all the questions in terms of who qualifies, who doesn't qualify, how the thing is being rolled out, and so on. And then lastly, in terms of the process going forward into in anticipation for the further implementation in 2019 and into the future, we are putting in place a policy development process, because while a policy has been de facto put in place, cabinets agreed on the funding is out there, we've put together frequently asked questions, we've spoken about what the conditions are, they're all written down, that is not a formal policy that we will be able to implement effectively over time. And so over the next few months, we'll be developing a policy on the student bursaries for poor and working class students. We'll also be developing a full policy in terms of the various funding issues, but specifically in relation to accommodation, so everybody understands what's actually being covered. And then the other aspect is the development of a regulatory free framework for university fees. That is a critical aspect of what we have to do before the end of this year. And to get all three of those in place in the environment, approved, gone through a proper consultation process, gazetted as policy for implementation, so that we can take this forward. We'll have to deal with the legislative issues if we require legislation over and above the policy. Yeah, regulations and so on. There's already been a process in terms of the review of the NISAC Act, where we reviewed the Act, but in the review it was realized after all the legal people looked at it that we didn't really need to change the Act. But what we needed was additional powers in terms of regulation. And so the minister did gazette that regulation change for public comment. That's gone out for public comment now. And we are busy collecting the public comments and hope we'll be able to finalize and publish that before the end of March 2018, which will enable the NISFAC to set in place various policy issues around some of the limits in terms of the bursary. But it's an enabling regulation to enable us to manage this thing more effectively, to get these policies effectively in place so that they can be utilized as the blueprint for how we deal with it. The other thing maybe, and this I'm sure we'll talk a little bit more about it, is that you know, with the new students coming in who are having to, particularly university students who are under the new dispensation for first-time entry students, the FTM students, they are going to have to sign a agreement form that is different from the previous agreement form. And that has been drafted already. Again, through a process at the moment, needs to be finalised so that those students can sign those forms. In the meantime, the agreements with universities are that we will provide the funding for those who are, in terms of the upfront payment, and as soon as the forms are signed, then the amounts can flow from the SAC. But those forms include the kinds of conditions that we are putting on the bursary, and I think the two specific ones are about that will be important are about the idea that whoever gets funded through the scheme needs to contribute back into society in different ways, and there are two ways. One, they should at least be in South Africa and hopefully working, although we can't enforce that because we can't necessarily find jobs for everybody, but at least for the amount of time that they were funded before they would be allowed to leave the country, for example, if they wanted to immigrate or something. So we stop that thing of just people, you know, we can fund people and then they go off to some other country. So we have to try and stop that. So that's the one thing that will require a legislative process and an agreement with Home Affairs, because we're going to have to track people afterwards to make sure that we do that. And then the other one is a service requirement while the student is, we put it into the process for while the student is studying rather than after the student is studying, because, you know, we know if you put in place something like an internship or a community service, you have to have funding to employ that person. So what this is saying that for every student that is funded, after their first year, they have to focus on the university. But from their second year onwards, they will do 10 days, 80 hours of some kind of service work. And that service work, we're busy working on a policy for that at the moment, will be a wide range of different things. It could be, for example, working at the SPCA, assisting in a grade R classroom. I know there was that strange, wherever, I'm just saying, it could be anything. It could be in an environmental cleanup project. It could be in a university or institutional process in terms of servicing in the library, doing mentoring for younger students. Whatever it is, there is that expectation, and that will be built into it that they'll have to do this in order to continue with their bursary. It's another administrative issue, but everybody feels it's very important to have that in there. Yeah. It is. So thank you very much. I think I've come to the end.
Certainly, honourable members, I know I can see the passion in my caucus and the many hours that you have spent, and of course the many questions that you are always willing to answer. But, honourable members, that nicely fits into asking NASFIS then to put their part, and I think there's lots of, in the presentation of the department that overlaps with yours. So I want to ask her not to go into all of that, because she has nicely covered, as I saw in the presentation, a big chunk of your presentation. You will just tell us who is here, CEO?
All right. Thank you very much, Chair. That's the one. It is. Sorry. I just changed the heading. Good morning, honourable members, colleagues from the department, colleagues from NSFAS. We appreciate the opportunity, as well as the Deputy Minister. We appreciate the opportunity of NSFAS to come to the Portfolio Committee and provide an update in terms of where we are with our operations, especially delivering on free education and the 2018 program. We have the privilege as NSFAS to have our board members join us in this discussion. I've got Ms. Bongi Masinga, who's a board member, as well as Professor Nel Dawood, who's also a member of the board, so we truly appreciate them them being here, so we're given an opportunity to say a word or two, because I think we as NSFAS are privileged that whatever mandate we've got and are implementing against, we've got the support of the board, and the board has been keeping us honest. And I think the reference point from Dr. Parker about the 18th of December, as well as the 20th of December, after the 18th meeting with the DIET, a special board meeting was convened to make sense of re-education, and that's where we got guidance from our board. And so them being here is really a privilege for us. Another aspect from the NSFAS side, the last time we were here, we were not strong in terms of our leadership, and we had said to you, we are out there trying to recruit a team, especially at the top, to make sure that we are capacitated to deliver. I think at the time, all we wanted to do was deliver in 2018. Free education was just an idea at the time, and I think we've assessed and believe that we need more resources to be able to deliver broadly, but at the top, we've got the right capability. So with that said, Chia, I really would love to introduce the really new members of the leadership team that are here. I'm assuming that Mr. Rambau, who's our acting CEO at the corner there, is familiar with the committee members. Our CFO, Mr. Lerato Nache, also familiar with the community, but I just want to introduce our HR executive, Ms. Vyoga Zidwane, there she is, if she can wave. And welcome, it's her first time coming into the performance. Just raise your hand so that this member can see. Why are you sitting? There's no chair, apologies for that. We've also had to understand that we need to strengthen our operations. In strengthening our operations, we've got a colleague who comes from the student sector, who we appointed as our general manager for operations, Ms. Tuseng Mpahlele there on the other side. Ms. Tuseng Mpahlele. I also have the CIO of the business, Ashvi Rajkumar. There he is. So I think these points I'm referring to just talk to the slide where we talk about building the leadership strength that we require to be able to deliver. And also there are a number of other senior appointments that we have made. Of course, with the support of the board, we believe that when you build the capabilities, you build them from the top and make sure that you plug in the right type of expertise. So I think it was important that we highlight that. Of course, our chief risk officer, Pravashti Naidu, is also here. I just want also Mr. Jomo Jacobs is responsible for our stakeholders more recently, making sure that we deliver on the TVET mandate. In terms of kicking off on the high level pointers, we as NSFAS, I had nothing to do with the blur view of this. We'll try and simplify the challenge by talking to some of the key points at a high level. Oh, okay, the terms and conditions that may be there.
Terms and conditions.
So I think first and foremost, as NSFAS, we were nervous when we saw the Hare Commission report come out saying please replace NSFAS with a contingency loan system. And so that brought a lot of anxiety into the organization. So you can imagine how exciting the 16th of December announcement was, because firstly it gave a sense of comfort that we've got a job to go back to. And secondly, it increased our mandate and responsibility. And I think having been on the path for the last 26 years as an organization, delivering on aspects of free education, to deliver it in full scale, I think has been just an honor. And I suppose everybody saw us jumping up and down in the media everywhere, talking about how excited we are about this. What that also did give us an opportunity to do was to reflect on our processes and systems. I suppose the biggest thing was we were almost halfway there with our evaluation of the applications, the over 300,000 applications we had received evaluating them on the previous guidelines. Now, with the pronouncement, we had to go back and start over that particular process. Again, with the intervention of the board, we managed to get about 150 temporary workers to come in and help us with the application process. So for us, that was very exciting because at the beginning of the year, we were able to say there are three categories in the application process. Category one is, will be those students that have applied to NSFAS and have applied to institutions, and those will get their funding decisions from the 15th of January. We also introduced category two. Category two were those students who applied direct to institutions, did not think they qualified for NSFAS, and we said that process will kickstart now in February. And then the category three were those students who, at the back of free education, they now think, I have a chance of going to study at a higher learning institution, but I had not applied at NSFAS and I had not applied at university. So we were able to just take that narrative out to the public of South Africa to give a sense of comfort. And what also made this more exciting for all of us was the support we're receiving from the department and also the ministry. I think through the engagement, the task team and the guidance and the ease of frequently asked questions, it was an honor for us and our staff to have the deputy minister come into our offices and affirm the work that we're doing, and also him feeling like he can ask us any questions for his engagement. And also we had the minister join us in our offices to help drive the message, the fact that actually this is an important national mandate that we need to deliver against. And also that makes everything very exciting for all of us. So in the context, we'd like South Africans to know that as NSFAS, the progress we have made because of the support. And also when Fitchett went around the institutions around the country trying to check how we were operating, I think I was happy to note that, yes, there were challenges, but students were able to apply, they were able to go to class, they were also excited about the free education. So broadly, South Africans must know that NSFAS has readied itself to deliver on the free education, wants to deliver education in full scale. 2018 will be a big learning for all of us, but we can assure you that 2019 will be a much smoother process. There are other things that are very important for all of us to note is that by the end of business, let's say 2 days ago, we're sitting at 417,000 applications. That moved from the 315,000 to this 417,000 applications just for the period of just at the beginning of Jan and up until around about mid-February. The walk-in process that was opened, and also this would be mostly the guys that came in from TVET via the walk-in system, and also mostly from UNISA, who opened up their walk-in process as well to a much larger group. The unfortunate situation about a walk-in scenario like that is students go in and apply and expect an answer tomorrow, and that creates a lot of anxiety in the system while we're busy focusing on giving answers to the Category 1 students. And I think we can then understand how we, your lines were inundated via SMSs and emails, how our contact centers were inundated with queries. And that remains a big area of focus for us as an organization. The other part was they need to improve service delivery. Everywhere we went, everybody's been saying NSFAS is not responsive, you're not responding to our call, you're not reachable. Where are you based? Why are you only based in Cape Town? All those sorts of questions became more, even more pronounced now that there was a big number of people that we needed to reach. So we are increasing our headcount to be able to meet the demands. NSFAS has not been reachable because didn't want to be reached. The volumes that were coming through in terms of questions and queries meant that we couldn't even get through half of what we were getting because most of it will be in thousands. And I think that was a big challenge. So we are busy developing a capability around making sure that our channels, we manage them effectively. But most importantly, we are talking to our board about increasing our headcount. There's also another big piece of project that we would like the committee to think about supporting NSFAS on, is that in the light of introducing a new system like free education, we would like South Africans to be reminded how big a task and a challenge and opportunity this is by bringing in those who previously benefited under the loans and still had to try and pay back the loans just how much of a life-changing an exercise is getting that free education. And I think we have a campaign called the Pioneers Campaign, which is going in full scale from the 23rd of March, where we'll just pick up about 15 top pioneers who benefited from NSFAS now are transforming their world. We believe that that messaging will help the first-year student who is now saying, I'm enjoying free education, so they can understand what concessions had to be made for that person to get their first degree. So that's a big piece of work that we want to be talking about. The other piece that is important is, as the NSFAS, we've got a value chain that drives our effort. Our first one is, how do you get people to apply? Second one is, how do you make sure that the information is the right information you've received? Thirdly is to make sure that you link the individual to the right product, which is a DH bursary in this instance, and what packages do they receive. Once you've gone through that process, the big one is, can the institution get the upfront payment? The second one is, can the students themselves get the money that is due to them if I'm registered, I'm confirmed with NSFAS? And I think that has been a big focus for us in the month of February. We can confirm to you all that all institutions receive their upfront payments, both at the TVET and a university level. The upfront payment has always been made up of amounts of money that are coming from our recoveries, and to a certain extent, some of the money that has been allocated to us for that particular financial year. So I think that has been a big one. What does that upfront payment mean? It means the institutions are then able to cover their tuition costs, they are able to pay the students for their accommodation, and allowances where they need to be paid out. So out of those that were funded directly by NSFAS, we then went ahead and made payments to those ones, I think it's 5 universities and 13 TVETs. The biggest thing that is different now in this regard is that we are moving away from a loan agreement form, and also are moving away from schedule of particulars, creating this national loan bursary scheme, bursary contract or agreement. So we've been designing that. We've designed it. We've shared it with the department. I think it's currently going through the approval process. We've given us until the beginning of the second term of schooling to have everybody signing those. And it is at the back of those that will drive or hold each other accountable. We don't anticipate issues of the past where somebody doesn't sign, because now it's going to be heavily linked to whether your fees get paid or not, or whether you get your allowances or not. So it's a big piece of work. And also we are excited to contribute to the conditionality of how do we bring a service program for the youth. South Africa has a huge opportunity to really define a proper youth service through this model if we just supply ourselves widely. The other piece that I think is very maybe important for the benefit of everybody is, yes, there was a strike in the past week. Yes, there were disturbances in our processes. But again, we can comfortably come back to this committee and say the strike has been put on hold. We've got agreements in place. The bargaining process continues. It's got its deadline of end of March, and with its full effect of whatever we agree on from the 1st of April. So thank you for your patience during that period of time. Yes, we had capacity that ranged between 20% and 30%, and that helped us going. And as soon as the strike was halted on Friday, on Saturday, most of the colleagues were back at work, Saturday, Sunday, and we're just pushing the numbers as we were expected to do. Now, one of the things then that has been pertinent in our discussions has been around the 2018 update in terms of the detail, so that you don't tire from having a single voice talking to all of this detail. For the 2018, I'll give my colleague, Lerato Nasser, to talk to it. But what I wanted to just maybe highlight with regards to the slide on the screen now is the fact that there was a clear understanding that says in the free education terms, there's a new mandate for NSFAS, which says you're no longer going to offer loans, you're going to offer bursaries alone. And also, that also was very clear, that says the full cost of study. The impact of full cost of study is the fact that the varied costs are always very important to consider there. And also, what we were very excited about was bullet point number 11, when the pronouncement was very clear that NSFAS will continue to administer all national bursary funds across TVETs and universities. on behalf of the state. I think that was also a very important one. So we then were able to make sense of what is NSFAS responsibilities, what the university's responsibilities, what do we go to TVET, to the DHET for, and what we go for the TVET for. This will form the basis of what we agree between ourselves and the institutions. This will form the basis of what we agree between ourselves and the TVET, so that we hold ourselves accountable on the right things. So I think that was very important. And also in line with Dr. Parker's points of clarity that we are busy working around, that are very important is the historic and NSFAS debt that remains an important one, the accommodation that needs to be standardized and formalized. So from a higher level in terms of what we understand free education is, you can always look to NSFAS and say we are quite comfortable and very excited for South Africans, to especially those coming from poor and the working class background, to have this free education. Help us make sense of it, because it continues to be a misunderstood concept. And we are rolling out our machines together with the department to make sure we communicate effectively. Now, let's use some of the nuts and bolts of 2018 program, and for that, I will enlist the service of Mr. Viratuna.
Thank you, Steve. Morning again, members. Just to wrap up on what Steve had presented before I get into the details, just as a way for background, just to provide the members around comfort versus 2017 and 2018, what we have done. Now, I'll just give a brief overview on how the application process worked. We opened in the 1st of August. We closed on the 30th of November. Most of the applications that came through for NSFAS were the universities. We then continued to evaluate those universities based on the rules that were in place. In other words, family income of 122,000 at a point in time. But through the work of USAF, before even the fee-free announcement was made, we both agreed that we're going to adjust the means test so that students going forward have an expected family contribution of zero. That was important. Then we had already designed our system to be able to deal with those issues, and a fee-free announcement was made on the 16th of December. On the 20th of December, we met with the board. We then agreed that we need to adjust our processes to be able to now assess students at a 350,000 family income. That meant two things. It meant that we needed to change how we assess the students, because it was very clear if a student has an admission or has applied for a position at the university, NSFAS needed to fund such a student. But our control measure in the system was that we will fund students up to the enrollment target in the system, to make sure that we do not break the system. So I just thought I'd just give that brief overview. And obviously the fee-free education introduced Category 2 students, where it was agreed that NSFAS is not going to open applications. What it's going to do is going to receive data from universities and then process that data via the integration. And then Category 3 are those students who prefer the walk-in, and we will be using the CADGE system to be able to deal with that. I think it's very important that we outline this input process, because versus last year, NSFAS had issues like not being able to account for the number of applications that came through, not being able to deal with some of the issues, and those are the issues that we've dealt adequately with. There was support on the back of that. On the board of May in 2017, the board brought in together members of USAF, members of the other governing structure from the universities, to form a task team called USAF that is made of NSFAS management, made up of other members of the board if that's available, members from DHET and other VCs. And that's how we've managed to come to this point where we've dealt with some of the issues. And as of last week, at least we made a big progress in addressing the future student debt in a form of having a standardized notional allowance amount for books, for food and transport. And those are the gains that we've made in the system. Obviously, there's been some challenges, and I will get to that. Now, what is the fee-free education meant for us? Was that at a point in time before the 16th of December, NSFAS was running in a world where an allocation from DHET for universities was 10.3 billion, and that was going to cover plus minus 246,000 students, and then the 2.5 billion was the standard an allocation that was made for TVET, that was just a 5% inflationary increase. And then NESF was just part of cleaning up some of the unspent surplus, had identified 1.6 billion that it was going to put together to fund students, to do mainly two things, to fund students if there was additional requirement, but to also deal with the debt that arose because of expected family contribution. I've already explained, members, that the means test now for 2018 academic year results in zero EFC, but for 2016 and 2017, there was some amount that students were expected to pay.
My apologies. I want to appeal to the media. We love it that you take lots of pictures of some people, more than others, but may I ask, they can't...
Yeah.
And you are disturbing the speaker.
Thank you. Thank you, sir.
But may you take pictures equally instead of some more than others.
So as part of the discussion with the board and the USAF, just to recap on the 1.5 billion and what they're using it for, is to deal with expected family contribution, the liability that arose from 2016 and 2017 academic year for students were expected to pay. And that liability we're going to finish the calculation at the end of March. And then the other portion was to be used to fund. The announcement was made by the Minister of Finance at the last budget speech that resulted in NESFAS receiving or being allocated an additional 4.5 billion for universities. And that will be largely utilized to fund first-time entrants into the system to ensure that we fund them at the full cost of study, as Dr. Parker has already indicated, to make sure that going forward, NESFAS and government do not create historic debt. And then there was an additional 2.5 billion that was allocated for TVET that will be mainly used to fund accommodation and transport. And that is a new bucket that is being introduced to deal with some of the challenges that has been experienced by the TVET policy. That meant that from the budget of last year, plus minus 11 billion from here, we've now grown to 22 billion. That NESFAS needs to administer for the 2018 academic year of study. And that has resulted in the organization having to do a huge step change from the 16th of December to January when the classes started. Slide 4 and slide 5, you can move this. Yes. We are on slide 6 now, check. Yes. Okay, 21, I apologize. Yes, 21. What is slide 6? Okay, thank you, ma'am. I think for NESFAS, we'll keep on harping on this point around the input into the system and the process. NESFAS to date has received 408,000 applications. These applications are made of two windows, the windows of 1st of August to the 30th of November, then the window of January, where we are allowed the TVET students, because they prefer the walk-in, to apply for funding for NESFAS. It meant that we needed to manage those two windows. Today, we can confidently say that we have rejected 18,000 students. One of the reasons was some of them were returning students. In other words, that they're already studying at universities, they did not need to apply. We rejected those as some of the students. Now we are left with a total of 241,000 for universities and 148,000 for TVET. What did we do with those? We completed the evaluation. In other words, we received the application forms, had the ID copy and the consent form from parents. We verified that against SASA databases. Those were means test ways, because those we believe that they're they are at a lower level of poverty. Those we agreed that will meet as waiter. And then we did away with filter 1 to 3. For all the applicants who applied to us based on the database from DBE, we merged them with the database from DBE. Those who did not make it are part of the rejections as well. The ones that were left, we took them through the credit bureau process where we assessed only one thing, the family income, up to a level of 350. It meant that we needed to change our processes as well. To date, where are we in our evaluation process? We have confidently communicated to 117,000 students, 369,000. Where we have received an admission data from both the TVET colleges and universities, and we could match them. Because we have always said that our limitation point is the enrollment target at the universities. And then for those that we have received admission data, after we had a meeting with the USAF last Wednesday, where we put this issue that part of our process involves NSFAS receiving admission data or registration data from the universities and TVET colleges to enable us to make funding decisions. Today we are standing at 43,641. For those that we do not have an admission data, and that doesn't necessarily mean that those will end up at universities or TVET colleges, it's 113,904. The reason why we are saying that is necessary because we are driven, again, by registration data and admission data. As part of the process of cleaning up, there are those applicants that we did not discriminate against, that's 29,594, where they applied to us, but there were other documents that were missing. Either could be an ID copy, either could be a positive consent from the parents that we communicate with on a daily basis via our contact center, asking them to provide us with the documents. And then there's other information mainly related to the TVET colleges where we are requesting or we are awaiting the information from the credit bureau. So members, that is an update in terms of the 2018.
Thank you very much, Lerato. The other question that came about that we need to clarify was how close are we to making sure that all our 2017 issues are addressed, particularly those that relate to the TVET and the universities. 2017 became a very big focal point because of the Quintile 1 and Quintile 3 decision, as well as the unfunded. So we want to just give you a brief update on how we are dealing with those, as well as the TVET in terms of closing out those gaps. And for that, I'll give it to my colleague, Victor Rambao, please.
Thanks, CEO. Good morning, members. Mine will be extremely brief, simply because the department has also given you an overview of the work that we're doing. The CEO, when he opened, he also gave that indication. But what I would want to draw your attention to is...
Just
save a slide. Yeah, we'll move into it. Previous one, EO. Next one, next one. Next one. Next one. Yes, it's this slide. So, beginning of the year, we did experience quite a lot of challenges, because we initially had 13 colleges that were on the student centered model. Then we moved the balance to make the total of 50 TVET colleges. What this meant was, from a NSFAS point of view, what we believed was going to be a clear cut on how we implemented the student centered model proved to be different, which as a result, we had TVET colleges that continued to battle to submit information that was necessary for us to then process their payment. Working together with colleagues at the DHET on the TVET branch, we then realized that for us to move forward, we need to actually intervene on the ground in a way that we've sent colleagues to work with the TVET colleges, and we eventually formed a task team that is based at Ekurhuleni. Why am I bringing this context, members? When we realized this problem, we were only sitting at 70% of compliance from TVET colleges with regards to submission of documentation, which as a result would give NSFAS the mandate to then process payment. And after the interventions, currently we're sitting at 92%. And if you look at the money that has been committed and what we've paid, we're comfortable and confident that we are doing right things for students. On the TVET side, we have 1.8 billion rand that we've already generated agreements for students that have already signed, and of that, 1.7 billion rand has been pushed through. And with the interventions that are in place, we're comfortable that by the end of this financial year, we would have at least reached our numbers. On the university side, we also experience similar challenges. However, on the university side, the USAF Trust team was formed earlier on, where we identified these problems and we could move as fast as we could for us to resolve them. But it is important to note that there were some funding decisions that were made very late in the year, which as a result, certain students had already left universities. And once we realized that we had these students who did not sign, which was going to be an impact into 2018, again, we pulled a team of 20 individuals, particularly at Central University of Technology in Bloemfontein, because that's where most of these problems originated from. And we camped there as NSFAS together with the department and some of the members of the USAF Trust team in the form of financial aid officers, and worked together with the university and resolved these issues. And I'm glad to say the CUT matter has also been closed. So we do have the detail of how much we've paid to each individual colleges. Currently, there are no showstoppers as far as we're concerned with the plans that we've gently put in place, and we're confident that we will be able to resolve any outstanding matters. Thank you, Chair.
So apologies for the juggling on the slide. We updated the look and feel of this presentation so that it was more optically acceptable, even though the fonts are still small. So please do accept our apologies. And I've seen you frantically jumping around. We apologize for that. We'll make sure we fix that next time. So with that said, Chair, we'd like to leave it at that and open up for questions.
There we go. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Honourable Tibia, Honourable Sandevestal, and why are you fighting?
Chair, can I just say, any institution that can't even get their presentation in a sporting fashion, page numbers, and so on, if you can trust them with some amounts of money, really, Stephen, watch me cook in the country.
Okay, Honourable Member. Honourable Killian, he's got his anger out, that's just important. Very well. Okay.
I know all the other
members. Let me just say right at the outset that I am very concerned. It appears to me that the culture at NSFAS, with a view to presentations to Parliament, is not a good one. We received the presentation late yesterday, last night, this morning. We received it this morning. Then we come here and we only to find that there's another presentation. Now, you know, you have to account to us, to this institution, for every cent that is spent. And we get a very insecure sense about the institution. If you don't want to open up to us, give us facts, don't move the pages around, because that is an old trick. For those of us who've been in institutions, legislatures, parliament for long, we know exactly what happens. Beautiful presentations, colorful, etc., etc., but when it comes to the facts, they move. They move, and really, so I'm not cross, I am concerned, Chairman. And I want to say this is not the first time that NSFAS is doing this, and we will not take it next time. Chair, I want to say, next time if this happens again, we would love to suggest that we send them packing and to come back when they have prepared themselves adequately. We understand capacity concerns, but this is not acceptable. Chairperson, secondly, I also want to say to the department, we're getting a presentation which is marked confidential. Why? There's nothing confidential about public scrutiny of documents, about figures, about money. We're working with tax paying people paying their taxes. And we must scrutinize every cent paid and whether we have, in fact, achieved value for money government. So I really want to say to the department, please don't put these documents on the table. We're working in complete transparency as per our constitution. So please, let us get those things right in terms of the presentation, in terms of not moving in with new presentations, and having presentations friendly enough for us to follow your presentation, because otherwise you pick a page here and you pick a page there, and we have only been confronted with a document here. Really, Chair, I feel very, very strong. So those are my remarks about it. Secondly, Chair, it's in the same category, Chair. And I know you placed me here because you want to take my microphone away. But the second point is, Chairperson, I just want to say that I feel there is somewhat progress, but there is still a sense of concern, if I must just express that. Here we are receiving the highest increase in the tertiary sector. And the issue is, do we have the capacity, both in the department as well as in NSFI, but I want to extend it further in the TVET colleges and some of the universities. We've had bad experiences last year, and we want to know to what extent is the SBUC system ready to be rolled out effectively to all institutions. But that brings me to the point of the policy. Chairperson, I am concerned that we're only now moving to policy details. What is being funded in the tertiary sector, and it's different. It's different for the university sector, and it's different for the TVET sector. And I want to ask why. Why? Because I understand the department only recently took over TVET sector. But the point is, what is happening now is the information, and that is why I feel uncomfortable with the presentation by the department, because if you saying in your presentation, your assumptions, data assumptions, it's sort of a little bit of a thumb suck, because you are not 100% sure about your system. The Auditor General has raised that issue before, Chairperson. It's still there. It's not resolved. Where is the problem? Is there accountability in the department for the TVET sector? If not, there's a major problem, because at this stage, or up to now, there was a 70-30 split in TVET sector. 30% goes to students, 70% goes to the institution. 80-20, whatever the split. The point is, students had it very difficult. Okay, there's more money coming to that sector now. But the institution, how do you verify that what we have in the TVET sector is actually there? So therefore, it's placing a huge burden on NSFI. You know, so somehow it must be resolved between the department and NSFI. There must be clarity and there must be communication, because the sort of the juggling of this thing is simply not going to work. It's not going to take us forward. We cannot vouch as a parliamentary committee saddled with oversight. How can we trust the figures that are coming here? Just now, there can be a challenge, and the Constitutional Court can find that we have not done our oversight correctly. So this is really a very major issue. And we've been complaining about this for some time. We don't see urgency in the department. Chair, now, just specific ones. I've marked this page. That's the one on the data assumptions. And it's critical because it deals with accommodations and it deals with transport. And we're going to get some comebacks on transport. People are saying, you know, this is not, this, you know, I didn't get a transport allowance. And I, you know, I'm entitled to one, whatever. I mean, so that must be clarified. The issue of the students that are reluctant to sign, I think it was probably it related to signing up for debt. Now, I think that stumbling block will be out of the way. But my concern is historic debt. Is it going to be wiped out or not? Because I see NSFAS deals with specific debt, historic debt. What happens to the rest of universities? Could we have clarity about that? Chairperson, then I also want you to just ask the last one. Okay. Last question regarding, I've got 10 more, but last question is the department and is NSFAS managing the TVET sector as a TVET sector, or is it applying a university model on the TVET sector? I want to have clarity about that because I feel we cannot build another bureaucracy increasing headcount at NSFAS. We should develop a better footprint of NSFAS. And that is my concern. I feel if we're going to blow out the numbers, the headcount numbers again, it's going to be at the top. And I feel we need the numbers there at the institution. Chairperson, with that I would like to conclude, but if there's a second round, I would like to conclude.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair, and I do hope that Ms. has taken note of my feelings regarding their presentation and the lack of confidence that, or the lack of confidence that unfortunately instills. Chair, we are getting lots and lots of complaints regarding the NSFAS administration. We get it from students, we get it from institutions. We get from the minister a report which says that certain amounts have still been outstanding at the end of last academic year, which has not been transferred. Now, all we hear today is the upfront payments. Chair, I've got a problem. We speak about upfront payments, but we are quiet about the delayed payments, the outstanding payments of last year. And I want to know from this first, can you today assure me that all the outstanding amounts, all the unreconciled accounts of students have been fixed by now? If not, what percentage is still outstanding? I'm concerned that an institution in this state of affairs is being entrusted with a lot more money and a lot more work to administer. And all I can think of, and it's a difficult task, that there's no doubt in my mind, you must keep track of every individual student that perhaps ceases to study in the middle of the year or drops a subject and things like that. So my second question is, to what extent have you already issued a protocol or a format in which information, data between yourselves and the institutions will be shared or be forwarded? May I just say, Chair, one of the colleges showed me a list last year of names of students who never even studied at that college, but according to the NSFAS database, has been allocated to that college. It just boggles the mind, and it's a significant number of such students. The second one is, you are waiting for an enormous amount of money in the new financial year. But the colleges and the universities are already carrying the costs of those students because they've come to the college or the university in terms of the new rules or the new dispensation announced on the 16th of December. But your financial year only starts on the 1st of April. When will these
universities and colleges who are actually now providing the bridging finance for January, February and March, when will you be able to settle at least the first 3 months of this year's expenses which they had to carry? The next question, can you just quickly inform us how many days did the strike last? The next one is, tell us in terms of all of this, how do you see the future of the student-centered model, the SBUX? Will we be getting to a point which the institutions would love, where all disbursements, all grants would be paid directly to the students, and that the universities and the colleges would not need to actually do LESFAS's work on behalf of LESFAS by dispersing those grants to those students? And then lastly, Chair, can I just ask of the department, what should change so that your communication, which you quite rightly issued as one of the challenges, for that to improve? The DDG, Mr. Patel, signed off a letter on the 15th of December for colleges regarding guidelines for 2018. Now, if you know the education sector in South Africa, if you know the general trend in the southern hemisphere of this earth of ours, the 15th of December is not a date that will allow people to prepare adequately for the first day of the new academic year. So surely, and that was irrespective of the president, don't blame the president, 15th of December was told them on the old information that was available. My question is, how can you ensure that such communication, such vital communication, in future, get out, let's say, at least a month before the closing of our institutions? Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Kekana.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, the first is on capacity. You know, in South Africa, we are used, and we've mentioned this when we're dealing with the backlog of certificates, that we are used to a level of computer system where you go to the bank, and I'm sure for the billions and billions of people who put their money in the bank, you can just do a transfer for Eskom, for Telkom. You can draw as much as you want. You can have a temporary loan on the machine. Now, that I'm just saying that is a system we are already used to. Simple people today, men in the street, can stand on an ATM and do all those transactions. Now, is it really for capacity that difficult? I hear that there are task teams working on this on daily basis. But take welfare system. Welfare system for social development has been there for a very long time in Scandinavian countries. Don't we have students in our universities who've got masters specializing with welfare systems, and who can transfer that knowledge of distributing money from government? You know, we're dealing with this as if this is a new phenomenon. This has been long going. We could be behind developed countries, maybe we did, yes. Can't we transfer that tested knowledge to our own systems here? The question is to Dr. Paga, are we not able to get somebody who can boost our technology here by getting best practice all over the world and helping us implement it in South Africa? Because otherwise, really, we must appreciate now that money is available, we should use it to the best of our abilities. And the ability is there. So I just want Dr. Parker to talk more about the capacity that can't we get a quick fix by just employing some experts at one of our universities to come and help us here. That's the first point. The second point, Mr. Rampau, you know, I got very excited when you say you were camping at the technical at Bloemfontein. I wish you could camp there at Venda, because our oversight there was disappointed, because students who you could see are very eager to study, but they are struggling to access money from NSFAS. You know, when we do oversight, all this thing that we get from NSFAS is the opposite on the ground, because when you get there, everywhere students are complaining. So what I'm actually saying about this question is that when we're talking about the facilities at TVET, I know two TVETs that we have visited, Jabulani in Soweto and in Sekhukhune, the TVET that we visited there. The TVET is there, but the workshop is not there. So if you're saying TVET must have 70% practicals, how come there's a TVET without a workshop? Because the one in Sekhukhune, actually, students ended up studying human resource, because TVET by nature must be practical. And I wish that when we talk about building facilities, infrastructure, we should also include TVET workshops, not just residences. Because these students are now receiving money. If they don't study the appropriate way, they'll end up not being employed, as we got the report when we were moving around. So my strong request is that please build workshops in all the TVETs that are there. The last point. Some system chair that you can copy from is the English and Afrikaans historical universities. They all have medicine. They all have faculty of engineering. And that is why the ratio of employment and unemployment in South Africa is still very low with racial groups, very low with the white groups, because they've got those two faculties to start with. And my request again to Dr. Parker, the rural universities from previously disadvantaged groups, I know there's now engineering at Venda, there's medicine at Teflo, but all of them, remember that the old black universities are all in the rural areas. Can't we have those faculties? Because we can't complain of scarce skills forever. Look at Johannesburg. There was this, next to it there was Rau, next to it there was University of Pretoria in the urban area. And all of them have medicine, have engineering. So I'm just saying that my request is that we should have these two faculties, especially engineering, because these are the faculties that are said to be sky skills, and these are the faculties that are said to be needed by the economy for its growth. Thanks.
Just want to ask Dr. Parker, what is the GDP you're working on when you claim that we are going to reach 1% of GDP, and when will we reach that 1%? When is it projected to be reached? Then, what is the actual estimation of the numbers of students, not the percentage, who you visualize ultimately will be covered by this scheme every year, and where does the 40% estimation come from, which would be 400,000 students on current numbers, counting university students only? So when will we reach that 400,000? Is that what you're aiming for? That would be 40% of current student registration. But presumably that will then go up, so some idea then of the numbers of students who you visualize will be given free education. Can you also clarify the average amount that your assumptions have calculated will be given per student? And is there a cap? Is there going to be a cap? I understand that there is already a cap operating in some universities. We heard at the University of Pretoria there was a cap of 75,000, which they were saying was too low. So if you could give us some of your thinking on the idea of a cap. Then has any of it been funded from internal cuts in the department? And if so, what are those cuts and how have they been justified? Or has most of it been funded by cuts from other departments? And how do other departments feel about it? And then at the moment, only 90,000 university students have been funded, seems roughly 90,100, somewhere around there, because that's the number that seems to have they're eligible for funding, and they've been accepted by, they have been offered a place in university. Now, what's your comment on that number? Is that low? Is that high? Is that in fitting in with your assumptions? Do you visualize it will go up over time, maybe over years, or do you think this is going to be an average number of students for first year for universities in the future? And then for NISFAS, I noticed that you are having a dispute with the department who wants only N plus one to be funded. In other words, you're funded for your degree plus one extra year bonus for any mishaps you might have. But NISFAS wants to continue funding N plus two, which I think we've always thought is a generous amount, especially now, given that one of the reasons why much of the failure has been explained, how much of the failures in the universities have been explained, is lack of funding. So if the lack of funding is removed and students are properly funded, presumably they won't need so long to complete their degrees. So what is the rationale for sticking with the N plus two? And then could you just explain, so we have 90,000 to 100,000 roughly university students funded with admission. Some of them not yet finalized, but it looks as though they will be finalized. Then you also have 134,000 returning students funded. And it's unclear to me what's going to happen with those students. Is their money now going to be a grant? Or is it going to be a loan? And what does that do to your assumptions about the amount that this is going to cost? Because presumably it puts it up in a different category now if it's a grant as opposed to a loan, and that is going to affect your budgeting. Because I think a lot of the discussion around budgeting has been around the new students and not around this large number of students who are now also going to get a grant, even though they're only 120,000 limit. Can I just say also that it's really an appalling presentation that you've done. We would have liked to see something more like the department, where it's clear exactly what they're saying, why they're saying it, and Dr. Parker gave a really clear, excellent presentation. With NISFAS, it's so full of figures, so full of, you know, long involved discourses on various subjects that it's very difficult to make sense of it, and I would like NISFAS to come back in a month or so and give us another clearer presentation and a report back on how this has been going after a month. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Let me first commend the significant budget increase for the universities and TVET sector. Subsidies and NSFAS funding. But in the presentation, Dr. Parker largely covered the funding for the universities and TVET. There is no mention of what is going to happen in the CET, if you can also speak to us on that, because in November 2017, you spoke, we were given a presentation regarding the challenges in this sector. I would like to know whether the department has capacity within the TVET branch to monitor the infrastructure maintenance project. Yes. Do TVET colleges have infrastructure maintenance plans? If not, what support is the department offering? Lots of tenders will be issued by colleges, and having learned from universities how irregularities in this area have caused contestations and courts had to intervene, leading to delays and cost overrun, what systems have been put in place? Because we learn from lessons from what has happened before. The enrollment targets for the MTSF were reviewed and kept at 710,535 for the TVET sector due to lack of funds. Similarly, the foundation programs, which was targeted at 5,000, that one was discontinued. I would like to know whether the baseline increase in subsidy for TVET will enable headcount enrollments and foundation programs or to continue, or the capping will continue until the end of the MTSF. Regarding student accommodation and transport, we have learned from our oversight visits that most colleges do not really allocate funds to students, and they all sometimes come up with their own conditions. By August 2017, I'm just reminded that when we visited NSFAS, most payments to colleges were not done. Those things really disadvantage our students. And I want to reiterate what was said by my colleagues again, that the data that you are basing your allocations on is inaccurate, because we know that you have challenges in relation to data, TVET data for students. What are you going to do differently this time? And in relation to this, the challenges that are in the TVET sector, Honorable Killian has spoken on this one, that there must be efficiency, and it requires a present management in this sector. I don't want to mention names, but we want to see you on the ground. Those are responsible for this sector. I don't want to say so and so, but we do want those people who are responsible, because we know that this sector has migrated to DHET. A lot of challenges are expected, but the management must be there in order to deal with the challenges. Your presence is not felt as the department. On NSFAS, when you were speaking on the frequently asked questions, you referred to the centralization of NSFAS as an issue for students. That is what we also experience. If you can speak to us on how you plan on remedying this situation, because it is a huge concern for students. And I want to agree with Honorable Kekana that we get a very good report on what is being done by NSFAS, which is contrary to what is happening on the ground. Students are still complaining a lot. When you go for oversight, always NSFAS will be an issue, if we can improve on that one. Lastly, Chair, I was looking at the conditions attached to accepting the bursary for NSFAS. There is where it says participate in a minimum of 10 days, that is 80 hours of community service or special project work. It's your page 8. You can, then there's another detail. And then it says the student must submit report confirming participation signed by the manager of the program supported once a year. I'm just wondering how will this be monitored? Because we don't want to say all these things, write it nicely, something, things that will not really be adhered to or will not be monitored. The last one, where graduates have to undertake or to remain, undertake to remain in the country and participate in the economy in which, in whichever way is most opportune for them for at least the number of years they have been funded, that is on the bottom. That brings a lot of questions, because what must the student do when there are no jobs in the country, and then because of the bursary, a student is forced to remain in the country whilst there are opportunities outside. So those things, when we make these conditions, we need to have accommodation for what if, in this instance, what can happen for the student. How can the student be assisted? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to have just a few questions. I won't be long, Chair. A number of the questions have already been articulated. I firstly want to start on a positive note that spans a month. That with all the doom and gloom that was expected as we went to the end of last year, the speech and coming to the party as from the 16th up until when we started having registration going on at the institution. I think the department and NSFAS have done quite well given the task that was at hand. Making sure that the systems, however lacking, which were in place, made sure that what we anticipated on the day of opening of registration, we did not see all that gloom that was expected. The part that the representation from the department shows there has been a lot of working together in as far as NSFAS and the department in making sure that they are on the same level of understanding what the directives and policies are. On the side of NSFAS, the program that deals with the 15 pioneers, that tells a good story about what has happened in the past and how we should go forward. It's applaudable. The 2017 problem, there's a side that deals with the problems that we had from 2017, combined it with the reliability of our data. I think there's been mention about the problems and the unreliability of the data that we have been using. There are three items that I want to both the department and NSFAS to talk to. In one of our oversights at the university in the Eastern Cape, before admission could be done, there were a lot of outstanding fees supposedly to be paid by NSFAS. As a result, the students could not readily go into applying for their next intake. Now, the university became innovative and used an acknowledgement of debt form, which they did themselves package so that they can identify the student and the debt and come on board for the second year. What is the status of such acknowledgement of debt? Will it remain debt, or is there a plan in as far as making sure that the students are assisted through NSFAS? the outstanding results as per the ability of NSFAS to make an assessment for them to assist the students, if that can be spoken about as well. The integration of the IT system so that we can talk to NSFAS from both the universities and the TVET, it's also it was also cited as one of the challenges that we have. What is our plan around that? There are frequently asked questions which we have made good on having a template that deals with that. There are frequently made allegations and which we have not made much progress in having a template that deals with that allegations or a plan that says, NSFAS, this is the allegations, we are in our sixth month, we are in our second year, there's still a lot of money outstanding from both students, but also from the TVET sector as well. How do we deal with such allegations? The allegations coming from the students or the allegations coming from the TVET might give an impression that there's no working together in this regard. And if that could be clarified, it would be helpful. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Just one or two from my side before I ask you to answer, which I know are many, many questions, but let's see how we can deal with it. The first one to NSFAS, I really want to ask, when are you going to get out of that hellhole that you're in Cape Town? We really think it's not accessible to disabled people for starters, not accessible to many students. And who is going to come from Gauteng to drive all the way to Wynberg and take a taxi from wherever and a train that doesn't move and stand between two stations and all of that? I want to encourage the department to do something about it. Because NSFAS, by the way, is an institution who interface with people, young people in this instance. And if you interface with people, you have to be accessible to them. I know you are using the social media quite a lot and it's quite effective and so on, but I think there are many instances where we've seen, as we've gone to institutions, where students like to see the real thing. They'd like to walk in and see for themselves this is actually how it works. So I'd really like to ask that one. So, secondly, to the department, at some point you told us that there are very many different bursaries that are being offered by lots of other people. In the presentation that you have done, have you factored in the quantum of that? So if at the TVET colleges, for example, there are many bursaries, would you be able to tell us then you have deducted in the figures and data that you've given to us that indeed, you know, I went to Stellenbosch, says we've had free education for a long time. By that they mean that they've always had a large portion of students that have received bursaries. We don't see you talking about that anymore. On the Public Finance Management Act and as well as the Auditor General, I'm scared, Dr. Parker, that the Auditor General is going to come back and say that you have used money illegally without you having provided a policy, which were things that the Auditor General had pointed out insofar as the department is concerned many times. Now, I'd really like to know, I wouldn't want you to fast-track something and have a big fault line in it. But we think that, yes, you've got to go through all the democratic processes and so on, but we think that this one has to be in Parliament sooner than later. Otherwise, we create a situation of everyone floating on air and everyone in a period where there's uncertainty and where there is no clear policy script. Anyone can do anything, just anyone, and they will say that they thought this is how it needs to be done. So I really would want the Deputy Minister, this one,
something that we don't think can wait and has to come back as soon as possible. I want to ask Matthew, we spoke about this last year also. Can you give the, if it's not the entire parliament, but at least this committee, a dedicated line of communication that we can get to? Because we have many, I can tell you all my letters I've sent, I've never received any responses to them. Surely there has to be, there has to be a particular line that we can use, because a lot of the students do come via the members of parliament. They all know that we are on this committee, and they would want to ask answers. So can you give that one to us? There's a problem that we pick up with the when we did oversight, and that is you have got regulations, and all the institutions have got their own prescripts about whatever it is. So we decide somebody have appealed, this person can come back again. Master says you can't give money to this person. So we then have a large group of people that still fit in nowhere. Nowhere. They then ask, where do we need to go? So that's one example I'm giving. There are many of them. So my question to you is, as part of this entire process, how have you brought yourself, both the department and NASFAS, led by the department in particular, brought yourself in sync with the fact that indeed all the institutions have got their own decision-making mechanisms and their own councils and all of it? But you can't have everyone having all sorts of different decisions and then the money must follow. You can't have that situation. Now, we'd like to know, how are you dealing with this? And lastly, I wouldn't want to talk about the 40 million rand again. But again, I'm never going to stop talking about it. But again, when we had oversight last year, and particularly this year, the part that we don't hear is, other than trying to get them to do something at the SPCA and so on, I'm not being bad about it at all. The point that I really want to ask is, have we been able to talk about the ethical conduct of the recipients of this huge amount of money that we continue to distribute? It's not a new thing that we're giving money to students. We do not hear about this thing. We go to a university and they tell the students go across the road, they ask somebody with a trolley, I'll pay for your money. No. I'll pay for your grocery, you give me the cash. And they go next door to Pops, they drink it, and they go there to their rooms, and we saw all the bottles, because we did oversize. We saw loads of bottles at the institution. Now, and then there's another university that's fighting for a liquor license. Imagine why they would fight for a liquor license. Now, the truth is, are we aware that you have become the latest attraction of siphoning money? And what are you putting in place about it? And I can list it to you. I go to UWC. Who is across the fence? Students with orange overalls, aprons, canvassing for accommodation for a boulder. Because this boulder says, there, you're going to get money from that for accommodation. Here is the building. Can we do this thing? We go to the other institution. We see transport people lining up themselves already. Because here is dedicated money that government is going to
go to another institution, you see some strange food efforts that are being done by whoever, and of course in another institution you saw some people having barbershops in their own rooms. All very strange. Now, I want to ask the members, isn't it the right thing that we have a proactive, that the committee have a proactive stance that says that we should consider, honourable members, having a conversation with Skopa. Now, Skopa normally bothers about when people have finished and then they come there and they do what they do and so on. But we think it would be the correct thing if you would support the idea that we engage as a committee already with Skopa and together between ourselves and themselves work out a mechanism that says this 67 billion rand, we ask Skopa what they together with us can put in place, and we have an ongoing, I think it will be completely very, very amiss of us to not say something about the huge amount of money that has been given, and we as a committee put in place mechanisms ourselves that will say, other than calling them back on the Bobozoli, put them in place, put something in place that will say that this is the path to prosperity for young people. We do what we do because we do all of this because we want learning and teaching to improve. We're not here to throw money up into the sky and say, halala, we have arrived. We do what we do because we want to make sure that we contribute to the GDP of the country, we contribute to the investment and improvement of lives of everyone. And in doing so, we too as Parliament must take the responsibility of making sure that that which we have decided has indeed got to follow to where it is supposed to. There might be some other ideas that we want to have, honourable members, in between now and when the department brings their full budget with all the other things to gauge against all these different line items on what it is that we want to do. So I want to end up to ask you to answer the very many questions that we have asked, but to say to you that we have normally called you before us next on a regular basis. We don't think we will stop doing that, because there are two things here. The one is we can't still talk about this student-centered model thought and the backlog. We really have to get out of this thing, but also then say, yes, free education, how are you doing with it? We have to talk about the rollout of NASPIT as it relates to all the different institutions. And so I think you must appreciate when the members are not very happy, we will not expect you to come again with a report that you bring a few hours before our meeting, because we too have a responsibility to go through it. And secondly, we will also not accept that you bring to us a report that you can't read. And then maybe in the future, in how you distribute to ask everyone to report, it can't be to start at page 98 and then you go to page 5 and then suddenly we're in the middle. It can't be. Let's just be a little bit far more organized than what we have. So I ask you to respond to why are you still in that hellhole and all the others.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, for all the questions. I think they're all very pertinent. I think what I'm going to do, if it's okay, is to go through the ones that I could respond to. I'm going to ask Virk to respond to some of the ones for the TDEC, and then you will hand over to NISFAC to answer all the ones that NISFAC needs to focus on. I hope we've captured them well enough. We understand the concerns that you have expressed, Honourable Killian and Honourable Sunbeck, and I think we will have a discussion with NISFAC as well about that. I'm really not sure about this confidential thing on... hadn't noticed it said confidential, and I don't know why it did. I think it must have been on another set of slides before that just got carried through. So we apologize for that. It's not meant to be confidential, although universities haven't yet heard what exactly they're getting in terms of this issue. In terms of the issue of the data, we have there's concerns about the fact that we haven't managed some of the funding to students from last year and the problems with data going forward. And I think it also links to Honourable Sakana's question around why can't we just get with kids technical person in and we can just deal with the problem. But the problems actually aren't about the IT platform. That is working, all sorts of things are working there. The problems are the integration of data and the quality of data. And the data as it's coming from the institution and how it's being uploaded onto the problems around that. So it's dealing with the interfaces and then dealing with the data at institutional level. And a critical problem is the data TV. One of the major difficulties that has been stopping funding going from TVET and going to the TVET has been the credibility of the registration data coming in. And that I know the TVET branch is busy dealing with. I'm not sure if somebody here from the TVET can explain the process that is underway. But I do think we're going to have to think very carefully about how we manage those issues, and it's something very urgent that has to be dealt with. There is a process around the HECMAS system that is being put in place, and I know that with the universities, generally, it's okay. There are a few where there are problems, but not at the same level as the TVET. Also in relation to the issue on the data in terms of the assumptions that we've made, the 40% in terms of university students that will be covered, and the in terms of the TVET students, it's 100% in terms of the 20% funding, so it's all students in terms of enrollment, but in terms of accommodation and transport, there are very specific assumptions that have been made. And Zerk can talk to how those assumptions have been made, but it is based on data that the TVET branch do have in terms of the historical context. And we know that that's one of the risks that we face going forward. We've had a discussion with National Treasury about it, and we are aware that this could be something that we're going to have to deal with. But hopefully by the end of the five-year period, we will have managed that process and we will then be in a place where we will be absolutely confident around the numbers. Perhaps Honourable Bogoliat links into the question you asked about the 90,000 students, the first-time entry students. We worked on the 40% of the first-time entry enrollment, and that came to around about 85,000 students altogether. The 90,000 is what's coming through the system in terms of the NSFAS has got on their system. And once there's been confirmation that the people have actually been admitted, then actually they are only eligible for funding. NSFAS had a little typo on their presentation there. They're not eligible for funding unless they are admitted. So the process is admission. Yes, you may meet a means test, but you're not eligible for funding until you have a place. So it's a two-step process. Admission, eligibility for funding. You can have done the means test and say you meet the means test, but that doesn't make you eligible. So I think we have to get that language right, and that is an absolutely critical aspect of it. So once this data has been dealt with, the registrations from the university have been matched properly with the applications and all of those are registered, then we'll know exactly how many and how far out we were perhaps with the estimate. When we were doing the estimate, we estimated that it could be between 40% and 50%. But we didn't know for certain. What we had to do was utilize the data that we actually had in terms of the missing middle project we had last year and the missing data that was coming from the SAP processes. And at the time, we had to look at a ceiling that the that National Session was saying, we've got to stick it in the ceiling. So we had to try and adjust around that, which came to the 40% mark. But knowing that, there could be some extra funding that will have to be found. So that is something that we're all very well aware of. National Treasury is aware of that risk as well. And we have agreed that once we've quantified all of this and we know where we are, we will then be able to deal with it. The issue around capping of the allowances is a critical part of the student the policy on the student bursary scheme. And we've been very deliberate about calling it a bursary scheme. We know that there's a lot of discourse out there about free higher education. This is not free higher education. Higher education is still cost sharing in terms of the decisions that have been made. There are still fees for all students. There are certain categories of students who will meet the requirements to be able to receive a bursary. And those students will, in effect, get higher education for free. And we want to try to work towards changing that discourse so that we can really understand and communities outside can understand what this means. It's about the sustainability of it and also ensuring that we really are able to deliver what has been promised. And then in terms of the actual amount, the way that we calculated it, we took the actual cost of study from universities, which we had done a survey from the institutions themselves. At each institution, they looked at their total sort of cost in terms of tuition, and we took that as an average per student that they had. So the assumptions that are in there as well, depending on the types of qualifications that are at a particular institution. That amount then was utilized as a basis for the full cost of tuition. The spreadsheet then also worked on assumptions around an accommodation cost per student. We do not include any of the UNISA students because UNISA is a distance education and we don't have accommodation for UNISA students. So that is excluded. And then for the contact students, we worked on the assumption of the 40%. And there we worked on, and I can't remember the exact average cost for accommodation, but it was worked on the actual average cost that universities are charging for their residences. The food allowances, we agreed there need to be a capping of food allowances. One of the big discrepancies in the system at the moment is that there are different allowances across the system for different students, but all students have to eat the same. It's not okay to have that. And so together with NSFAS, we've asked NSFAS to do that work and to put together a proposal for what the standard allowance would be for all students who are covered, and we want the same allowance across the whole system. What the amount that has been brought up, I think, was 13,500 per annum being proposed. There are some institutions where it's already way above that. But the idea would be to freeze those institutions' funding and then introduce it to all of those that aren't yet at the 13,500. And as inflation catches up, we'll end up with a standard across the entire system. And we hope that will happen within five years or so. But that is an important one. The other one is a standard for the book allowances. That is something now that has been set by NSFAS for now. But we have to still do a lot of work on understanding what these allowances are during the year, and that will have to come into the whole issue around the policy of how we do this. So there's that issue. Then in terms of the issue of refusal to sign the laptop, that is something that was in the system before. But we expect that will disappear now that these are gone. they're all gone to us. We do expect that they will disappear, that students will find them because now they know they've got grants. One of the, but we have to have generated laptops for students to sign them, and that's one of the challenges I think that they can pick up on in terms of why we've still got outstanding 2017 students around, and NSFAS can't disperse money to institutions if those things have not been done. They can't, in terms of PFMA, in terms of everything. So institutions can say, we are owed all this money, but if the students haven't signed the form, the money can't be transferred. So that's one of the challenges that we're trying to deal with at the moment through the task team. The issue of the there's so many questions. The historic debt is the other one that I wanted to pick up on. And it leads to the thing of the, you know, the acknowledgement of debt form. The acknowledgement of debt form was something that was brokered between the Department of Higher Education and Training, University of South Africa, NSFAS, and the students, the SRC presidents, because this was something that was causing a huge problem at the beginning of the year. We had a meeting with them because students were coming in. They had this debt, some of them having debt because there had been unexpected family contributions that they hadn't paid before, some having debt because of the differences between the amount they got from this fact and what the actual cost was before, some having debt because they were new quintile 3, 1, 2, 3 or half the students who were in the unfunded lot who hadn't yet signed their laptops, but we wanted to be able to register all of them. So we in fact designed that form that the universities made changed to their own logos and everything on. And what happens there is through that process, every student who signs acknowledgement of debt form, attached to that is their actual fee account. So we understand exactly how much money is involved with each of them. And attached to that acknowledgement of debt form is that we will undertake this due diligence during this year to understand the quantum of that funding. Now that actually managing and paying off that debt will happen through two processes. One, the earmarked amount that NSFAS has for historic debt, and if that's insufficient, we have had the discussion with University of South Africa and will be working with their board to utilize some of the funding that's coming into the subsidies to manage that process and to get the debt out of the system. Because we know it will not be realistic to go back to National Treasury to ask for more money on top of what we've got. We rather have to deal with it. And if we deal with it in that way, and there's been agreement with the whole board of the University of South Africa, then what will happen is that we'll be able to manage the process and close it. And because future students won't be having that debt, we're not going to have that problem in the future. Now, I think the issue of the differences between the first-time entry in the university system and the continuing students is one of the things that has caused confusion, because it's only first-time entries that are covered by the new dispensation. The continuing students keep the same packages, whatever. They'll continue to have more debt while they go through the sale, but then we will work out how we manage the repayments of that through this process together with University of South Africa and the additional subsidies. Now that tail, as it leaves the system, all new students will not have that debt in the future and will have got rid of this so-called historic debt problem that has been an Albert cost across all institutions over the past. The new students, the continuing students, they're still under the old NSFAS rule, and therefore they are still N plus 2. They are the N plus 2 students. They're under the old NSFAS rule. But what has changed is they will no longer have a loan. They're going to have a grant going forward. So whatever their package is, it's a grant going forward. The new students are under the N plus 1. I'm not sure that we have any disagreements with NSFAS. I think that's been solved. NSFAS board has been clear. It's N plus 1 for the new group of students. But the critical thing about the new group of students, and it links to the issue around the monitoring of what's going on, and war issue, I mean, I agree completely about the ethical conduct. And maybe it's something we have to put into our thinking around the policy, because it must be there. And then there must be grounds on which you will say to a student, you're going to take away that bursary because you're not acting in a way that is going to be acceptable. So that's not currently in the conditions that we've got. We've got academic conditions and service conditions, but this thing must be added. But what we are doing, and we have together with the other pilot project that we've got underway for the missing middle funding, the IFSAC, we have been funded through the Amanda and Michael Dell Foundation to develop a data platform for monitoring students who are on financial aid. We've been testing it last year through the pilot, and we're expanding that now in one of our universities to include all first-time entering the track students. So we can, every student who is funded, either through this program or that program, will all be on this platform. And what this platform does is it demands that the student has to log into the system and they have to answer certain questions on a monthly basis. So you're monitoring from their perspective. If there's a problem, they're given an advisor and a mentor and a whatever. And then it also tracks how they're doing in terms of their actual assignments. They are submitting assignments. They are doing and track remarks and so on. And then that linked into the other program that we already have in place through the University Capacity Development Program, and which is being enhanced, the so-called wraparound support, is about ensuring that these students get the right kind of support so that if something is going wrong, you pick them up early. You don't wait until they've already failed. And we hope that this will help with the N plus one. The other thought that we've had, and it will have to come through the policy, so it's not actually a policy, but it's the idea that if we've got a student who's completed N plus one, they've been funded this way, but now they've still got a few odd modules left to complete their qualification, obviously we want to support them. But then we probably will have to think about how we support them, and we would want to suggest that it must be a loan. It's going on into more years than the N plus one that is a bursary, a grant. That's going to have to come through this whole process, but that's a suggestion at the moment. I've covered, I think, most of the critical questions that were asked, but the others that are directly linked to TVET, I want Dirk to answer, and then I haven't answered for this bit.
Thank you, Chair, honourable members. I think I'd like to start with a question about enrolment. Before I do that, I'd like to give you just the context about what this funding is. I think let's just start with that. This amount of funding that we receive now is a phased-in approach like we discussed in the presentation. Now, what it means, we had to prioritize the funding into three pockets. The first pocket is the student fees, right? So from a policy perspective, government need to pay 80% of the costs, and the out-of-pocket cost for the student is 20%. So first priority was, let's cover that gap. That's a 20% fees, right? That's covered. The next priority that we've identified is travel and accommodation, because it links directly to the pockets of students. That's why we've identified travel accommodation to be the second priority. Then the balance of the funds we then put into the 80% policy. Okay, so that's what this money is actually for. That means that the student fees should be fully covered. Travel and accommodation is about 2.1 billion new money that we spoke about, right? And the balance, about that 1.4 billion rand increase in the DHT subsidy, that was the balance of the funds available. The question we had there was, what impact does it have on enrollment? Your 710-535 number, you asked that question. That number will be static for the next 5 years. The reason being is the 80% policy is not fully funded yet. It's a phased-in process. So only when we've got sufficient funding to cover the 80%, when we reach that target, then we can say, right, let's expand the system. But it's going to be static now up until we get the 80% where it's supposed to be. So for the year one now that we've got, my calculations are that, you remember the 80% is funded at 54. This new, the amount of money we've got should take the 54 to 69. And then we need to grow over 5 years to reach 80%. I think I wanted to give you that context. That's what this money is all about. So the only growth that we will have in enrollments is on the occupational programs. That's where we envisage the growth, because the funding that we have now will not permit extensive growth on the ministerial approved programs. I think that's very important to know. So all the discussions we had today was for ministerially approved programs, excluding occupational programs. Good. All right. That's what I'd like to add on that item. We spoke about, the question was raised actually about travel and accommodation. Why are there different policies applied at TVET colleges? You had that question. It's a very good question. I think going forward we need to look at standardization. It's a very difficult exercise to do. That means that the same tariffs, distances, those type of things needs to be applied at all the colleges. Currently, we're not in that position to say that is what we have. That's why we're saying the colleges currently for this year will use their own policies and procedures to determine that allocation per college. That's what the guidelines have been indicating. So we don't have a DHET prescribed specifically. We're saying that the colleges will use their policies for that. But I totally agree with the portfolio committee. I think in future we need to see whether or not it can be standardized. But it's a massive exercise to do. Different colleges, rural colleges, urban colleges, different distances, taxi fares, train fares. So just giving you the mix of the things that's in that pot, it would be to look at standardization. It is a big exercise to do. But yeah, it might be worthwhile to do that. I think we'll still have a discussion with the unit that's responsible for that. But if you want to achieve standardization, then obviously you'll have to do the research to come up with that proposition. I'd like to also say that we discussed in our assumptions when we actually asked Treasury for the spot of money, when we worked with them, we made assumptions about 11% for accommodation and 18% for travel. At that point in time, again I'm saying it's our best estimation. We will only see after this first year that we're running this new allocation, what was the actual application. I mean, please bear that in mind. That was an assumption made at that point. And we did it out of benchmarks through discussions with colleges to see to what extent are your students subjected to travel or accommodation. It's obviously not all of them. You see, so please bear in mind, 11-18% is our best guesstimate. We will see the actual results after year one. I think please note that. If I may discuss the infrastructure in totality. We had a lot of questions on infrastructure. Now that's the 1.3 billion that we've got additional for TVET. What is the department currently engaged with? Number one, because we had questions about infrastructure. Currently we are constructing, because you asked about capacity. So I'm going to start with where we're at with the construction and we'll add the 1.3 to this part. We're currently constructing 16 TVET colleges, and it also links to the question about workshops. So the 16 colleges that we're currently building, they comprehensively provide for workshops at those 16 sites. So it's inside the blueprint. So any future development that we might do will comprehensively include workshop and construction. So we're currently building that 16. Now it links to the capacity. We're building the 16. We've now received another 1.3 billion that we need to administer this year. It is putting extensive capacity pressures on the department. 1.3 billion rand is now for repairs and maintenance, including new infrastructure. So it links to that capacity. we really need to see how we can beef up the capacity to do construction on the one side, 16 colleges, plus managing this new 1.3 billion grant allocation. So I'm foreseeing a little bit of capacity problems or challenges in that regard, which we'll need to address. In terms of what are the department doing for supporting colleges specifically for infrastructure? Now, we've created a unit called Building Maintenance. So we've done the following. We are in process of developing a national infrastructure maintenance plan, that's national, and also a national infrastructure asset management system. That will enable the department to monitor nationally what are the repairs and maintenance requirements, what are infrastructure, new infrastructure requirements. So we've developed that. We've trained colleges, we've rolled out templates, so we are heavily investing in that area to make sure that we can cater for that. So we are in process of developing that, but additional capacity might be required for this 1.3 billion. So what is the 1.3 billion? Let's discuss that. So the 1.3 billion is for repairs and maintenance for the current infrastructure and if there were to be new infrastructure requirements. But the department through this unit that I spoke about now will evaluate proposals from TVET colleges. Our primary objective of this 1.3 is to make sure that we address the current infrastructure. Painting, the toilet ablutions, the facilities, it's in an absolute dire state. Now, what's the reason for it being in such a state? If you look at your program funding in the past, we never received a capital infrastructure grant for years. I think RECAP was in 2009 or 8. Since then, there was no capital whatsoever. So our primary drive is now to use the 1.3, identify critical priorities, and then go for repairs and maintenance in that field. I think new infrastructure is something left later, except for these 16 sites that we're currently building, and that's NSF funded, not voted funds. So that's infrastructure. If I might just touch on the data issues. The data issues is a very important aspect. UDG indicated to us high level on data. The department is currently disclaimed on TVET college enrollments. Okay. So we are trying to fix that as best as we can. But the problem for Portfolio Committee is if you're sitting with different systems in 50 colleges, which now needs to integrate into, we've developed a TVET MIS system, Management Information System National. But you have about four or five systems in colleges. Now, you cannot standardize the information that comes through. It's still a massive challenge. We're trying to fix that and to get the data, you know, uploaded correctly. But that is TVET MIS in essence. There's a lot of data issues surrounding that. And I think the fact that we don't have a system that's now fully functional, we're not in a position to identify if one student might be registered at the college. That's the issue. If you have a fully fledged national system with good data, you can run analytical tests throughout the source. So we're not there yet. And I think the problem is, and I think you must note this, we don't have the authority to instruct colleges, which is councils, to procure a specific system. We may not intervene in procurement. We may provide the data standards, but we cannot say, choose system A. Remember, it's procurement process, public finance management, that stipulates procurement is a regulated environment. So I need to say to you, it's our problem. Excuse me? No, so I'm giving you, from a department's perspective, we've got an M&E responsibility, but the council is a juristic body. So it's difficult for us to prescribe specific systems. We can challenge that, but yeah, okay, Jean can respond to that. Okay, all right. Good. The other question we had was on bursaries. Okay. Lost input. You asked about other bursaries. What is other bursaries, the implications specifically on this process? Is the other bursaries are referring to the occupational side, not necessarily the ministerial approved programs. So those were CETA funding for occupational programs. It doesn't have a direct bearing on ministerial programs. Okay. so that excludes that process. I think that rather than conclude it, it's NSFAS, the opportunity.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you
very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think we do take the feedback on the presentation, the ease of read, timely submission, and following it through. I think we had brought a lot of better credibility in the last two presentations we've read here. I think we regressed a bit. And that sort of took away from the essence of what we wanted the committee to know. So really we take that feedback and we'll make sure it's fixed. I'm just going to address some of the key questions that were raised. And the one that I'm going to pass on to my colleague is the one around integration, because that's a big data set, data point that we need to discuss on. Firstly, on the complaints, at no point did you want to come here and present a really rosy picture. The reality out there is this frustration on the ground, frustration based on when am I getting my allowances paid, frustrations around has my application been processed, frustrations around my allowance or the rules for accommodation. There's a number of frustrations that we definitely know are there. I don't think we as NSFAS have showered ourselves in glory with regards to the relationship we have with the students and the institutions themselves. And it's a work in progress. It doesn't really help that we are still based far from where the actual action takes place to be able to take the notes and act on the ground. And I think one of the things we did towards the latter part of last year was to activate the financial aid officers at universities, really going back to them and said perhaps there were some errors in the way we implemented the student-centered model, gave the impression that the role of FAOs will be diluted or won't be needed. And that sort of became a big central point. I think we would not have made the gains in free education if we had not activated the financial aid officers and the student support services in the TVET. That has been a big focus point for us. We had workshops across the country to communicate, to re-communicate what NSFAS is really about. I don't think there will ever come a point where everybody gives NSFAS high five, especially when it comes to getting the money and the timeliness of getting the money. We do very well at some instances, and there was a question about upfront payments and how do we cover the difference in financial year ends. The upfront payments are meant to cover the January period, the first quarter of the year. So that is why we have done with that, because it helps the institution balance their books. So the upfront payment helps us in that regard. We are looking to institute an upfront payment for students as well, so that we can be able to close their gaps when they start, because they go months without having the allowances paid because we want them to sign a contract before we embark on that. And we are simplifying the issue, trying to make sure that the signing of the loan, the bursary agreement is simplified. But yes, there are issues. We are dealing them. And I think one of the major decisions we are looking to present to our board is how do we make sure that NSFAS is adequately represented at institutions themselves and in and around the communities that we serve. It's called the points of presence strategy that we'll be presenting to the board. The other question was about more detail around the payment. How does the payment work and the rules associated with that? It's become custom that every year, the year starts, we pay upfront payment to institutions, and we use the data of how we've used to pay them over the period. This year, with shortage of funds, we paid about 13% of what would normally be their annual allocation. So various institutions will get a different amount at that particular 13%, but that was all paid out. Now, that may have made created an impression that institutions can carry on believing that they've got the money. I'll take focus on the TVET. We still haven't fully paid out. I think we've got about a balance that we still need to pay out to TVET. We've covered 92% of all the payments that needed to go to TVET. And I think to the point made by Dr. Parker, it's very clear. We only pay on signed agreements. The 92% says we have paid based on signed agreements. There's the 8% that we are busy closing out to make sure that we pay against those signed agreements. Now, what have we done to make sure we address this issue? From the beginning of January, we set up a set up shop in Eguruleni West, the college there.
So all institutions, TVETs, come in and plead their case around the quality of the student data that they shared with us and the confirmation that a agreement has been signed. Now, that has been quite good because everybody now comes in and presents their case. Yes, we did have a situation where institutions thought, now for the upfront payment, I don't have to claim that. So we had to reissue our communication and get them to be called. So a big part of it is that. On the, what's lagging on the university side is really been closing the gap on the unfunded students as well as the fiscal on Petro 3. And the SBAS rollout, I think there was that question about how ready are you to implement the to roll out SBAS. We were ready to try and implement SBAS widely, but part of the focus on free education and readjusting our system to just do the minimum of validation and evaluation, we kept it to what it is right now, which is 5 universities and 13 colleges from an SBAS point of view. And also we were ready from March this year to roll out the Standard Bank as well as the VBS Bank plans. Again, there are rules that are changing in line with free education, but we need to now start adjusting, and then we are pushing those timelines a bit out. But plans are definitely in place to make sure that we pay through our own NSFAS defined channels. I think that's a big part of what we are busy focusing on. There was also a... There was also a question that was raised around the conditionality of the bursary, whether we have capacity to do the monitoring of the 40 hours that needs to be spent. I think we are defining all of that elements of the conditionality. We haven't even done the proper assessment on our readiness. What is good is that is kicking in from 2019. So we've got 2018 to prepare adequately for that. I think I wouldn't want to repeat what Dr. Parker has already alluded to. When will we get out of the hellhole? I hope we'd never have to discuss the hellhole again when we come here. We have the support of the board. We presented a case in November. The board approved it in principle. They've asked us to come back to the board on the 16th of March to represent the case. There are a few things that we need to make sure they are adequately accounted for. So we've sort of done that. So we are hoping. But I think what I want to make sure I emphasize, I don't want to create an impression that come June we will no longer be in Cape Town. Cape Town remains one of the key hubs of higher education student concentration together with KZN. So it may be an issue of regional representation more than just moving house. And also, I think that's Parliament moving. there was the issue around continuing versus full-time entrance. I think Dr. Parker adequately covered that. I think what I just want to emphasize from my side is we can say it's a normal process, we need to convert our loans engine to now become a bursary engine. So all the loans that we're giving out are converted into bursary from this year going forward. And what has also been good is that the department has agreed that we're going to deal that historic debt linked with the loan of the last 2 years or 1 year, depending on which year of study that student would be. On the strike side, there was a question around how long did the strike last? The strike lasted 4 days. It started on a Tuesday, and we concluded all deals at 5:30 p.m. on Friday, and on Saturday, colleagues were back at work. So I think that for us was one of the we believe it was fast. We were concerned that it might drag long, but the board intervened and helped us engage on the key issues that we needed to engage on. I hope I answered the issue of the bridging finance, because that was part of how do we drive the payments. I also want to acknowledge the suggestions. Maybe before I do that, let me go to my colleague, Ashvi, who's going to talk about the integration side, and then we can sum it up.
At this point, Honourable Members, may I just check? I'm worried you are also going to disappear. And
We have asked the Deputy Minister to say something to us when we got all the plans to adopt the, or otherwise the Minister also. Can I ask Honourable Members that you agree that those questions that are outstanding, if they can rather send that to us so that we can save some time, as much as we would like to hear you, so that we can deal with some of the other matters. We really have the... is that okay, Honourable Members?
It's okay, well, thank you.
Deputy Minister?
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think what I'll do is I'll just go straight into the duty measures. I think the other issues, the department and then as far as we will respond to them in writing. And I think they also essentially cover some of our concerns that we have had as the department in interacting with the NSFAS. And so we will obviously actually copy it in those responses and also make the necessary follow-up. Now with regards to the Durban University of Technology, I think subsequent to our meeting last week, the university and the unions, both the DUSA and NAHAU, requested that we facilitate a meeting between the parties to try and see if we cannot reach some form of settlement that would lead to the resumption of the academic program. And essentially what then happened, the close to 7-hour meeting that we had yesterday with the General Secretaries of the DUSA and NAHAU present, together with the Chair of Council and one or two other members of the EXCO, we then agreed that the negotiations will resume today because there was a complete collapse of negotiations between the parties. So they've resumed today at 10. The unions have agreed to suspend the strike, and therefore work will be resuming tomorrow. The university will be reworking its program so that it includes catch-up for, I think, three and a half weeks lost. But they'll also be putting in place measures to ensure that the, I think, close to 6,000 students who were affected who couldn't register because of the strike can now or will now be allowed to register. The parties also agreed that they will try and conclude the negotiations by Friday, and failure which the national leaders of the unions and the University Council will then take responsibility and try and resolve the dispute. We obviously cannot say with certainty that there would not be a strike action post this if there's no agreement. But I think the commitment by all the parties to call in their principals if they deadlock, I think, is for us some form of relief. And I think we should appreciate, I mean, we've been asked to especially by students, to come in, intervene, and all of that. We need to appreciate the fact that it's a wage dispute, and that as the department or as the ministry, we cannot instruct or interfere or meddle with that, but we're quite worried that 7 weeks into the strike action, the parties are no longer bargaining, and we therefore had to restore that at least. So we're hoping that that they will conclude. But I think what's exciting is the fact that the parties have agreed to resume
academic work from tomorrow and registration and all of that, which means that negotiations will take place under a normal situation. So in brief, that's that. So we will be monitoring the situation and ensuring that you know, the situation remains normal. Thank you. Water.
So thank you very much for that. As we take leave of the Deputy Minister, Nestor, and the department, and thank you very much for coming and asking to respond to us. Honourable Members, your views on the minutes. Don't run away now. Honourable Members, can we ask the department and assets to be quiet as they leave the meeting is still in progress? Can we ask everyone to go that way, take the journalist with you that way? Honourable Members, you have the minutes before you of the... of November, the 8th of November, the 1st of November, the 8th of November, the 22nd of November, the 29th of November, there are February minutes, and then there's a page on the Members.
Is that the attendance?